Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in the studio for the first part of the show is Brian McInerney, senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service. He joins us every 3 months or so to give us a recap, among other things, the past season, what winter was like. That's is it meteorological winter, or how do you describe it? December, January, February?
Meteorological winter.
Meteorological. So yeah. So we're going to talk about.
So we've made it through that. We'll get a summary. You know.
Hopefully, yeah, we'll get a summary of that.
Most of us were really loving that, and other people, I think, were just trying to survive that. Oh, Chris
my
included.
Hand raised.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, also, we're going to talk about what the consequences of this pretty snowy winter is going to be as things begin to melt. Yeah. So, Brian, let's start with the past. How was this winter in terms of snow and cold and storms, etc.?
It was exactly what we had hoped for. When you think of how it started, in the first 10 days of October, we had 300% precipitation. So we started it off really well. The problem was that the second two-thirds of October, we didn't really have any type of major storm activity. So there was a weak layer in the snowpack for the avalanche community, and that gave them problems all winter long. But then when you looked into November and December, we didn't see a lot of moisture. We had storms that were maybe, you know, 5 inches, maybe we'd have a foot occasionally. And then we moved into December, more of the same active pattern, but not very moist. The key was we didn't have high-pressure ridging dominating the weather, and that was what we needed. High moved out over the Pacific. It was smaller. It was insignificant. And then what happened was January picked up in a big way, and then February it all came together. We had low pressures coming out of Alaska, and then we had a moisture tap out of Hawaii. They call them atmospheric rivers, and that was interacting with these cold fronts that were coming out of Alaska, and we had... Usually when you have storms here, it's an inch or two of water in the snowpack, maybe a foot to 18 inches. We were having 2 to 3 inches of water widespread, and a lot of the southwest aspects that do well in southwest flow really did well. So when you looked at snowpack at the end of February, what you found was the state was all above average, but the higher amounts were down in southern Utah due to that subtropical moisture tap off of Hawaii. We were up to 160-170% of median at the end of February, and it was cold, and that was key also. When you looked at last year, we started off in November looking quite good, 125-150% of precipitation, but it fell as rain up to 10,000 feet. And it was warm a lot last winter. We had a lot of rain events. This year hasn't been the case. It's been cold continually all through the winter. We have snow down to 6,000 feet, maybe 5,000 feet, and it stays there. And we've just kept adding to it. We haven't had a premature melt so far. Doesn't look like we're going to do that. So all these contributed to a really good ski year and a really good water year for the water people across the state.
When you talk about having more water coming with each storm this year than we've had in the past couple of years, does that, you know, were we getting much larger storm totals, or is that just meaning that we got denser snowpack?
We got bigger totals. If you were skiing this year, it just kept coming, and the snow was soft and it was deep, and it didn't kind of get that faceted layers. It just kept building. We also had denser snow at times, but the key was it was colder, and we didn't have that heavy rain, slushy snow. We just had a lot of powdery, moderate density to low density snow across the winter. We were about 1 to 3 degrees colder than average during the meteorological winter, really across the west, and there were some places that were 5 to 7 degrees colder. All of these things contributed to the ski year that we had and the snowpack that we had, and now we're poised to see how it's going to come off.
That is the question, and there's definitely a lot of talk about that in our community. When this snow comes off the hill, what's that going to look like?
Yeah, we're currently at 140% of median here in Park City at about 9,000 feet near the Thames Canyon lift. That's how we measure snow in this area. When you look around, you see south-facing aspects that are snow-covered. You see snow down to low elevations. And then you keep asking at this point, we're at April 2nd, what's the weather going to be? Because typically your first week of April is when the snowpack gets to be its largest volume, and then it starts melting and getting smaller. We've got three storm systems through the next week to 10 days. The first two are going to be a little warm. We'll have rain below 7,000 feet with snow above that. Mm-hmm. The storm we have in the next couple of days is probably going to bring about 5 inches of snow at the highest elevations up in Park City with rain below 7,000. Then we have another storm over the weekend. And then if you look next week on midweek, it looks cold again, and we're going to have snow down to some lower elevations. So for the people who are ready for board shorts and flip-flops and skateboards, we're we're still pulling winter in here and still adding to the snowpack.
Why? Why is that happening?
It's just the pattern we have now. It's due to...
Chris is shaking his fist and then, why?
I'm so going
sorry,
back
Brian.
To New Jersey.
Right? And it's a function of the high pressure isn't dominating and cold air continually moves in here. We're slowly changing to a spring pattern from the winter pattern, but still, we're still got cold air coming in.
But, okay, is this... what we would have typically seen back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s? Could this be considered kind of a normal winter back then?
I looked back in the data and ran a search on what's the closest snowpack we have, and that essentially is 2005. And then what's the biggest snowpacks that we've had since we've been keeping records back to like the 50s? And what you find is 2011 in 2005 are 2 years that were similar. It was true that during the 80s, we had big snowpacks and winter like this, and it was consistent. But if you look at the record and you kind of eliminate the climate change, the warming that we have, that was a wet period in our history. And then we had dry periods. The late 70s were dry. So it was somewhat of an evolution of dry to wet. Now what you see is we're dry frequently and we're warm frequently, and this winter was something that we haven't seen in a while, so our impression is this is record-breaking, and it really isn't. It's one of the bigger years we've had, but we were surrounded by dry and warm years dominated by high pressure.
Okay. So relative. Now going back to something you said a few minutes ago, we're at 140% of median at 9,000 feet.
Yeah.
So if I can understand that correctly, if median is basically the depth of the snowpack?
Median is the, when you take 30 years of data, it's that middle point between everything.
But you're talking about the depth of the snow?
We're talking about snow water equivalent, in the snowpack.
Okay. So 140%, if the snow water equivalent is, let's say, typically 10 inches, right, 10 inches of water, 140% of that would be 14 inches.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's just trying to get people who don't understand the percentages and what median is. So
yeah, I think we almost have 1.5 times what we normally typically have.
Like Nell was saying, okay, this stuff is going to melt eventually, but depending on the melt condition, the melt settings, this could come down in a lot of water, or it could come, in a more friendly, accommodating way, and not flood us out. Because places like Swanner are low points in this valley, and where I live in Park Meadows, that's a low point too. And so we could see a lot of water.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that we're going to have a large volume of water coming off this spring. How it's going to shape or what the peak flows are will be dependent on the weather. If we continue to be cold and wet through April and into May, and then suddenly we flip the switch and bring the sun out and crank up the temperatures, then our peaks are going to be much higher, which then we could damage buildings and structures along the creeks. If it starts to get warmer now gradually, we don't have a lot of precip, we don't have a lot of storms, it'll come off in an orderly fashion. Some places may have problems, clogged culverts, low elevation houses next to creeks, or if you're down in a sink, that may still give you problems.
Yeah.
But it's safe to say we're going to have a large volume come off this year.
And how are our reservoirs' water levels right now? Will they be able to accommodate that?
Yeah, they will be able to accommodate it. We're going to fill the majority of the reservoirs. So as far as our drought goes, we're losing drought designations every week. They get less and less.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so we'll have enough water to fill the reservoirs. That's what the water managers are looking for. They want to fill the reservoirs. They're not really thinking flood control. When we get with those people and we all talk, the flood hasn't come up. But if this continues with cold and wet, if you look at 1983, that historic flood where they had to build bridges over State Street, that was an average year that went into the spring. And then it just kept snowing and it kept raining and it kept going through May. And then it switched. It got hot, it got sunny, and it melted from the highest elevations to the lowest elevations all at once. It was isothermal.
Yeah.
And then a giant root ball got stuck in a pipe under City Creek, and then it just filled up in Memory Grove and then flowed right down State Street. That's why they had to build bridges. But we had landslides all over the place. Thistle landslide, if you're on your way to Highway 6, was during 1983. I don't think we're going to have that. But we have enough snow to cause a problem. It's how we're going to bring it off.
And like you said, though, but there's more on the way.
Yeah, there's more on the way. So if you're a skier, a backcountry skier, you're happy. Like, I think this is great. All of my friends, well, half of my friends are, they want it to stop and they want it to get warm and be done with winter. But I think this is great.
You're so self-absorbed.
You know, it just can snow all winter long and I'd be happy.
Yeah.
And spring, for that matter.
Yeah, and spring.
We're speaking with.
We're living in Park City, Chris. We have to embrace it.
I keep forgetting that.
Yeah.
Yes. 13 years. Eventually, it'll sink in.
Yep.
Speaking of which, we're speaking with Brian McInerney, a senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service. We're talking about all things weather and climate and spring runoff, et cetera. So it's looking good as far as our reservoirs go. We'll have plenty of water. To handle this summer, coming summer's needs, demands.
Yeah.
It'll be good. It could be really interesting from a biological perspective. You see lots of crazy things sometimes with more water, high water years.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, I'm thinking maybe this is a good year to hopefully recharge a little bit some of that groundwater, those aquifers that have been dropping, draining. A lot of the wetlands in town, Swanner included, have been just unbelievably dry. And so it'll be good news for those wetland plants, those wetland species,
those native
the amphibians.
Species.
That depend on those conditions. Yeah.
And maybe even the Great Salt Lake might come up a few inches.
Yeah, if we're
maybe,
lucky.
If
we're
we
lucky.
Have enough water left over to give to the Great Salt Lake, that might be really interesting to see if that water level rises. That's a lot of water to go. But okay, so there's the past winter and coming spring. Now, in case everybody thinks that is proof enough that climate change and global warming is not happening, Let me give you some pieces of information here I got off of the National Environmental Information Center, a group, NOAA, that tracks, among other things, Arctic ice. Here's where we are in the Arctic. On March 13th, Arctic sea ice likely reached its maximum extent for the year, 5.7 million square miles. That's the seventh lowest extent in the 40-year satellite record, tying with 2007. This year's maximum extent is below the 1981 to 2000 average maximum of 6 million square miles. So we're at 5.7 million square miles. The average is 6 million square miles. Here's the interesting thing. The 10 lowest years of maximum extent, I know that's a little confusing, but the broadest reach of ice during the winter, the 10 lowest years have all occurred since 2005. So just in the last 14 years, we've observed the 10 lowest years. So the Arctic may not have had as cold and snowy a winter as we have had here.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Unfortunately, this always brings us back to this subject. And it's the elephant in the room. You have a good year like this, but if you look at where we're headed, it's a temporary thing.
Yeah.
The dry years are becoming more the what we see typically. And then we have a year like this, which is excellent, but we can expect things to become drier. If you look at the studies done by NASA, they indicate that we are drying, our soils are drying, and they're going to get much worse by 2100.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we talk about frequently, but it's so nice to have a year like this where, especially for my job, is to go around and talk about all the good conditions. But you know in the back of your mind that we continue to warm. Our snowpack is continually evolving to that of a rain-driven hydrology as we continue and move on. And it's going to get drier. High pressure has been the dominant weather feature since 1980, and that's been increasing. A study out of Stanford showed that high pressure is dominating the Western weather patterns due to that very same fact that if you look at the research, the Arctic is warming faster relative to the equator.
Mm.
So the jet stream, and as the jet stream goes, the storm track goes, has become more sinuous. It used to be little wiggles, and each little wiggle would produce a winter storm. Now it's becoming a bigger sine wave where it goes farther into the Arctic and then swoops down in a more of a north-south direction into the Midwest. That's why they got so cold this year. And then you have snow down into Alabama and Georgia and those areas because the jet stream is becoming much more has
sinuous,
a bigger
like
sine
you say,
wave.
Big right. meanders. Like a river, you know, a slow-moving river has a tendency to meander much more and create, you know, oxbows and things.
Yeah.
That's the Mississippi River. The Colorado River or other fast-moving river can flow in a more straight manner. They're less sinuous. So as the jet stream slows, it becomes more sinuous. Sine wavy. The
yeah.
other thing we learned from Jeff Masters, meteorologist with the Weather Underground, is that he specializes in tropical storms. And really interesting thing he said is that tropical storms, hurricanes and cyclones, are slowing down in their forward speed. And that's why you're having these very devastating,
not in their rotational speed, but in their forward
right.
speed,
that's
just
right.
to emphasize
forward.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're yeah. instead of going 6 to 8 to 10 mm-hmm. miles an hour, so they're going at 2 to 3 to 4. And that's where you're seeing devastating impacts in the form of rainfall from these tropical events. The storm that just happened in Africa, the east coast of Africa, Idria or so, did just that. It was extremely slow moving. It wasn't a big wind producer. It was a huge rain producer. So those are the effects that we're seeing from a slowing or more meandering jet stream, too. There you go, Brian.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, more case. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I wanted to jump in and circle back to something you mentioned in there about drying soils, because I think often we talk about our snowpack, we talk about our reservoirs, we talk about the creeks, but not as much about the ground itself, you know, the dirt on the hillside. So talk yeah. to us a little bit about that.
So NASA, what they did was they looked at, they modeled and they did downscaling to the Western U.S. and really the U.S. in total. And modeled with a warming climate, what is it going to see? And what you find is we're seeing less overall runoff. We're seeing less stream flows. They're dropping. The percentage of water in the streams is becoming smaller. And that's due to the preponderance of high pressure in the west. It deflects all the storms to the north for the most part. And so what happens is since you don't get that moisture, your soil starts drying out at lower depths in the soil. We've got 140% of median snowpack right mm-hmm. now, but our forecast for runoff is maybe only 110%. And that's due to we have to first melt the snow and then put it into this very dry soil base that we have below that. Due to last year's incredibly dry winter and then this very hot summer, our underlying soils are very dry. So we first have to saturate the soils, and that takes some snow water equivalent to do that, as opposed to if you had a saturated soils, it would just run off into the streams. We have a deficit in the soils that we're going to have to fill first. Unfortunately, that deficit is gaining ground and it's getting drier. And then they projected it out to 2100, and we're getting significantly drier across the West as a result, unfortunately.
No, but going back to Nell's point, we got to recharge the groundwaters, bring the water table up. Because
yeah.
that's long-term storage that we're talking about, but that takes a lot of effort too
mm-hmm.
to bring up water tables. So okay, all of this is in play.
Yeah,
it's really fascinating, and you know what, Brian? This is just realism. This is the, you know, you gave that talk at the Kimball Arts Center back on March 13th, and you were presenting all these facts about climate change and where we're headed in the warmer world, and what the knock-on effects are. And people started to get pessimistic. And Brian's always so pessimistic. Thanks for the pessimism. It's not pessimism. It's realism. There's a difference.
Yeah.
And we got to be realistic about this and then move on and do something about it.
Yeah, it's just opportunity to look at the science, embrace it, see where it came from, and then decide what we're going to do, as opposed to just seeing it as something depressing and I'd rather not talk about this.
No, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, Chris and I often will ask that question to you, are you optimistic? Yeah. You know, when we have people and talking about these issues. One of my favorite responses was an author that said, yeah, I'm absolutely optimistic. We have some really big troubles, some really big problems in front of us, but we know what's happening. We understand it and we know what's causing it. So we have the tools in our pocket to fix it. And I think to me, that was a great perspective to kind of say, hey, we're taking this data and we can do something about it.
Yeah, we have a byproduct of burning coal and driving around big trucks. It's just something that's happened. So let's just look at the cause and effect. It's making our atmosphere warmer. So how can we turn that around? We know a warming atmosphere is really going to change how we live and eventually make it incredibly difficult for us. So let's find out what it's doing and then try and turn this around.
Right.
Because really we've got about 12 years before we hit the tipping point. And then after that, it's kind of runaway climate change with these feedback loops. And that's going to be problematic in a big way.
The tipping point may be 12 years away, but we are in it now.
Yeah, we're in it now.
We're seeing, we're in the change. When you were on this show in 2006 and 2007, 10 years ago or so, we talked about it's coming, this is going to happen, we better start doing it. Well, we didn't. We haven't.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't done enough. And now we're in the middle of it. It's here. How do you want it? Do you want, it's 2 degrees, do you want 3, 4, 5, 6? That's the opportunity, and that's what the next generation is all about. The kids that go down to the strike for climate and stuff, they're the opportunity. They have to see this as opportunity and not as pessimism and doom.
Yeah.
And that's hopeful. That's the where the hope comes in.
Yeah.
So, well, Brian, thanks for the realism.
Yep, you're welcome.
As always.
Yep.
And we'll see you in June.
Yeah.
When the temperatures will be about, 48?
It'll still be snowing.
And there'll still be snow
we'll
on the mountains.
We'll still be skiing.
We'll take it. I'll take it. Yeah.
June, right. At 10,000 feet, there'll still be snow. Should be.
Probably.
If things unfold.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a while for this to melt. We won't be in the mountains, the high elevations, for quite some time with this biggest snowpack. So,
July 4th skiing.
A lot of bugs.
All right, here we go.
Yeah,
all
right.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian McNerney, senior hydrologist with the National Weather Service. Thank you, as always. Let's take a quick break. When we come back,